Well, a big thanks to Darren and the team for driving us through the afternoon. It is Wednesday, May 14th. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Keith Tracy chats the League of Ireland and has his say on Hamer Halgrimson's Ireland squad announcement. Damien Lawler brings us all the big Gaelic Games news stories, while Nadine Doherty reviews the Leinster and Ulster ladies football finals. Greg Allen has the latest from Quail Hollow ahead of the US PGA Championship teeing off tomorrow. And journalist Matt Jones reflects on the historic Goodison Park. Plus, we'll round up today's sports news headlines. So if you want to have your say, you can text 51552, WhatsApp 087 187 9200, or find us on X at GameOn2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. Welcome along, Keith Tracy. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Shane. Dublin on a nice day. Can't complain, can you?
Can't beat it. You absolutely cannot beat it. And in football news, I'm just distracted already. I know we've an Irish international squad to get through, but the Stephen Quinney quotes, can we address them first and foremost? Because I love the League of Ireland, and I love even more the fact that we're talking about September 1913 and we're quoting W.B. Yeats in manager quotes. That's the level that the league is at now. If anyone hasn't seen it yet, and we will hear from Hamer Halgrimson very shortly. Stephen Kenny, the game was played on, Shelburne played on, and the rest is history. There's no rules anymore. There's no sportsmanship at all. It doesn't exist now. It's a big change for me coming in. Sportsmanship is dead and gone. It's Widow Leary in the grave. Poetic. Is there a bit of deflecting being done here by the Pats manager?
Yeah, possibly. I think the last couple of games from a St. Pat's point of view haven't really been good enough in terms of the performance. I know St. Pat's beat Galway 2-0 in the middle of all that, but they had Sober got sent off. Galway, how they didn't hit the back of the net in that game is beyond me. It wasn't through any sort of St. Pat's brilliant defending. Moses Dyer, I think he was 2 yards out and managed not to score a goal. So there was an element of luck in that. They didn't really perform against Bowes. They got turned over in the last minute. And I didn't think they were anywhere near good enough against Shelbourne. And to be saying that, you know, sportsmanship is dead. I was in the ground doing commentary on the night, and it was sort of a diagonal pass along the ground that Chris Forrester goes and dangles his leg out for, and straight away you could see Chris go and hold like the groin area, hip groin area. He'd obviously hyperextended it. He went down in obviously an awful lot of pain, but it's not a head injury. He's absolutely fine in hindsight. And the fact that Shelbourne didn't put it out, I've absolutely no problem with that. It is a Dublin derby at the end of the day, and it's up to the referee whether he deems that the game should be stopped. He didn't. And it wasn't like Shelbourne went straight for St. Pat's juggler and scored a goal straight off the back of that. They kept the ball for probably 30, 40 seconds and then hit the back of the net. So St. Pat's had an awful lot of time to do something, you know, be more defensively solid. So I don't think you should ever walk into a Dublin derby expecting over, you know, sportsmanship. Mm. You know, there's a certain level you expect, but Dublin derbies, I wouldn't be expecting anything.
No, another Dublin derby this weekend. Bowes and Shells. Damien Duff suspended for that one. I always wonder, does that make much of a difference when a manager is suspended? I think Joey Bryan has a 100% record now because this isn't Damien's first suspension, but...
Yeah, well, Joey's just as scary as Duffer, isn't he, really? So Duffer goes away into the stands and Joey comes to the forefront, and they're just as scary as each other. So I can't imagine the Shelbourne players, and obviously being champions, you know, you have that standard that you've got to get to every week, and I'm sure Duffer will have a communication line into the dressing room. I know it's not allowed, but it will
never
happen.
Never, Keith, so never.
The players will know exactly where they stand, and I'd be surprised if their performances fell off a cliff because Duffer wasn't on the bench, I should say.
Yeah, wasn't it Stephen Bradley pictured with a walkie-talkie, I think, at the end of last season or some form of communication?
There's all sorts. I do love watching Dorking Wanderers, you know, the BOA, the bunch of amateurs and film that.
Yeah.
And Mark White got in dressed as the mascot one day. It's brilliant, brilliant stuff. I don't think the League of Ireland go to that sort of lens, but yeah, it's brilliant at times.
Yeah. I think Shell's unofficial mascot is a Dulux dog, so I'd like to see Jamie Duff dress up that.
Well, we'll have to check. We'll have to make sure Duffer's not in it.
Elsewhere, the uncapped quartet of Josh Honohan, Josh Keely, John Joe, Patrick Finn and Killian Phillips have been included in the Republic of Ireland's 24-man squad for next month's friendlies against Senegal and Luxembourg. Captain Seamus Coleman returns to the squad, as well as Leicester City winger Casey McAteer. Ipswich Town's Sammy Smoddocks and centre-back Andrew Omobamadeli has
who has impressed with his performances in Ligue 1 this season for Strasbourg. Winger Fesli Abeseli, who has recently returned to full fitness for Turkish Super League side Istanbul Başakşehir, also returned to the international fold. Manager Hamer Hagrunsson has elected to leave out the vast majority of EFL Championship players to aid rest and recovery in their off-season. Ireland are set to face Senegal on Friday, June 6th, with kick-off at 7:45 at the Aviva Stadium before heading to Luxembourg for the second fixture on Tuesday, June 10th, with a 7:45 kick-off time. That's Irish time. Let's hear from the Irish boss now, Hamer Hagrunsson.
I'm really happy that we got Senegal to play here. This window is unusual because some of the nations are playing the World Cup. So it was not a lot of options, but to get Senegal here is absolutely amazing, and I have to give a lot of credit to the football associations to do this. I know it was not easy, and I think I counted at least from the 16. I think from 21 last games they have only lost one, and that was after extra time and penalties. So they are on a really good run, one of the best attacking teams in the world, I would say. Different kind of football that they are playing. Physically good, really a lot of speed in that team, and it's good for us to play teams from Africa, and especially such a good opponent, because when we qualify for the World Cup, we are going to face teams from Africa, from Central America, from North America, Asia. So it's good to start to look at it and plan and prepare. Also, we're playing Portugal in the group phase, and that's another attacking, really good attacking force like Senegal is. But I hope this game will be good, and I hope we will have a full house in Aviva when we face them in the summer.
51552 is the text number. Surprised Anselmo Garcia McNulty did make the Ireland squad today. Ireland hasn't got many left-footed centre-backs. Didn't Hamer say he wasn't going to pick Coleman and Doherty in the same Ireland squad going forward, says Kieran Amida? So perhaps maybe not start the same starting 11. Delighted for Josh Honan on his Ireland call-up. Well deserved, says one text. And then the following text says, read Josh Honan's selection for the Irish squad. It's merely a token gesture. No League of Ireland player will ever play in a competitive match, says Paul in Sligo. What are the outstanding narratives that stand out to you from that Ireland squad, Keith Tracy?
Look, I think it's great. Josh Honan has got in. It's brilliant for the League of Ireland, getting a player in. Josh Honan has been brilliant for Shamrock Rovers for an extended period of time now. So I'm delighted to see him in. Do I agree with the text in there that, you know, we're still a long way from seeing these League of Ireland players in competitive games? Yes, possibly. But the cold reality of this, if you're not a Seamus Coleman, it's very, very difficult to get players to play in these games. And I speak from experience, when you finish a long, even a championship campaign, you've been so, you know, Saturday, Tuesday, your body goes through the mill, and then you get the Ireland call up for friendlies in June, and you think, I can really do without these. And look, nobody...
It's no bigger honour, though, representing your country.
I get that, Shane. I really do get that. And look, I jumpers for goalposts when I was a kid. All I ever wanted to do was play for Ireland. But when you're in the throes of that championship season, and I know there's some lads in the Premier League, it's different for everybody, but when you're in the middle of that championship season, your body hurts. It really, really hurts. And when you look around, you will have your club manager saying, look, you don't really need those friendlies. You're better off on a beach. And it's difficult to get players in. So the likes of, you know, League of Ireland players to play in these friendlies, I've absolutely no problem with it. I think they deserve it. A lot of players within the League of Ireland deserve it. And there's some names in there that a lot of League of Ireland fans won't be familiar with. Like so, John Joe, Patrick Finn at Stade de Rennes, done really well. He's only 12 league appearances in Ligue 1, so it's still very, very early for his career. He's 21. He can play on the right wing, centre midfield, centre forward. He's a progressive midfielder, but again, 29 first team appearances. So it's very difficult to be saying that these lads are the future. I'm delighted that Seamus Coleman's come in. I think he's a big, big one. Obviously, he's our leader. He's our captain. Sammy Smodic's coming back from injury. Amma Bemadele, it's brilliant that he's coming back into the team. Abeseli as well, as you said. And I look at Josh Keely. When I seen Keely, I thought maybe it would be the drop of the centre-half, but not quite. It's young Josh Keely. He's a goalkeeper, currently at Leighton Orient on loan from Spurs. I've seen a lot of him in the FA Cup. He done really, really well. And I'm not sure if he's in as a goalkeeper or a centre-forward, because he has actually scored a goal this season against Oldham. A last-gasp equaliser. He's been brilliant in the FA Cup. So, yeah, look, excited to see it. But I do think it's a much bigger call, you know, when the Nations League, when the World Cup qualifiers come around, if there's any League of Ireland players or, you know, these are two friendlies at the end of the day, and you don't get an awful lot of friendlies in modern day football.
Yeah, Josh Connor's brother, I'm reliably informed by our producer, John, which I wasn't aware of, actually. Can I ask what you think of the value of continuing to have Seamus Coleman in squads, says Sean. What a servant, and of course he's the captain, but at 37 now, is it really a worthwhile venture calling him up considering his limited minutes at his age? Well, the leadership qualities, I would imagine.
Definitely, yeah. I would keep Seamus around for as long as he wants to be around. He's one of the few players in that Ireland jersey that has tasted success, and I say success with relativity. I'm not saying we're going off and winning the Euros or the World Cup, but he's won games, big games for the Republic of Ireland. So Seamus staying around, he's old school, he drives standards, he trains properly and he looks after himself, and to be still playing, I know he's had his injury worries, but to be still playing at that level at his age, he's obviously a very, very dedicated boy. And I just remember I played in a game against Northern Ireland and Robbie Keane was playing up front, and you know, it was one of those games where you thought it was a Carling Cup of Nations game. There wasn't really an awful lot on it, although it was not a glorified friendly. Robbie Keane did a team talk before, and the 30 seconds that he spoke for, it lit a fire under me. And Seamus Coleman strikes me as one of those people as well, that there are no friendlies in football. I remember him playing against Hungary and Szoboszlai, the two of them going at each other in a friendly. So yeah, I would keep Seamus around for as long as he wants to be around. I think certain players earn that type of respect.
Yeah, and important if you're bringing a Josh Honan, Josh Keeley, Killian Phillips, these younger guys coming through that don't have the experience of even being around the squad and being around the Ireland environment as well and training with them. On Josh, I know you made the point of that perhaps that there's not everyone will want to play. And now Hamer did say that everyone did want to be called up, but he's given certain championship players a rest. And he was very ambitious to say, because next summer is going to be very busy, we're going to be playing competitive tournament football. But is Josh Honan the best defender in the League of Ireland? Best Irish defender?
Well, it depends. Are you asking me if he's the best defender or the best...
I'm trying to think if there's any foreign defenders playing in the League of Ireland here. Best defender, because obviously you're going to call up the best players of the League of Ireland. So therefore, is he... Like, he doesn't strike me as that he's above other players that perhaps could be getting call-ups, like...
Well, no, I think he has some real good attributes. He can drive forward. He can play as a right wing back, a left wing back. And I've listened to Hamer Halgrimsson speak about him. And it's not just the fact that Honan can play right wing back, left wing back. He can do a little bit of everything. And I've been really impressed with him, not just within the League of Ireland, within Europe. And Hamer has referenced that as well, that it's the European exploit. So, look, I think it's a big, big pat on the back. And I hope he gets a cap. I think he'd be the first League of Ireland player since Jack Bourne to get a cap, I believe. I might be wrong with that, but look, I think it's brilliant. And again, given everything that he said, not that he said Hamer Halgrimsson, but he sort of insinuated that players need to leave the League of Ireland to get caps, I think this is just one of those things that he's patting people on the back saying you deserve it, although we're a million miles away from these lads in qualifiers.
It's not just trying to appease Stephen Bradley and that kind of...
No, I wouldn't have thought so. He's there on merit. I wouldn't rubbish what Josh Honan has done and saying it's just one of those to keep Stephen Bradley happy. I think Josh Honan deserves to be where he is.
Yeah, no, he has. He's been playing brilliant in the League of Ireland. And it is great to see League of Ireland players in the national squad, and long may that continue. Before we turn our attention to Goodison Park, we're going to be joined by Matt Jones very shortly. Just some other FAI news today. Hannah Dingley is understood to have resigned her position as the Football Association of Ireland's head of women and girls football after just over a year in the job. The Welsh woman was appointed last April as the successor to Eileen Gleeson, who had been made permanent head coach of the senior women's side. It is the second high-profile departure from the governing body in less than a month following the news that Mark Cannon will step down in June as chief football officer. The FAI would appear to have a ready-made replacement on hand in Gleeson, who has retained the right to employment with the association despite them not renewing her contract as head coach last December. An FAI spokesperson told RT Sport in March that Gleeson's position hadn't been defined. So another departure there. We are chatting Goodison Park and Everton. Before we do, did you see Sunderland last night, Keith? I can't go without... Literally the last second. The freeze frame when the ball crossed the line. The last second.
It was the most unconventional header you'll ever see. Technically, when you're trying to teach lads to head the ball, it was everything wrong with it, but Sunderland won't care one eye out that it ended up in the back of the net. And yeah, excellent. Can't wait for the final now. I've been promoted twice, but never through the playoffs. And there's a part of me, I know once you're promoted, you're promoted.
You wouldn't want that tension, Keith.
There's a little bit of me that did want it. In a strange, strange way, there was a little bit of me that did want it. It's probably the best way to go up, isn't it? Through the playoffs, last minute penalty.
Yeah, no. But there's, you have all that, the high of what unfolded in Stadium Light, and then it's going to be absolutely heartbreaking Wembley if they lose to Sheffield United. You're like, oh no.
The more Sunderland were celebrating, I was thinking there's still a final to be played here, but you can imagine, like, last minute winner to get you to Wembley, emotions running very, very high.
Yeah, there's been some atmosphere last night in Stadium Light. There's been some atmosphere over the years in Goodison Park. Matt Jones of the Everton Byline and the Blue Room podcast presenter and indeed content editor with Liverpool Echo Sport joins us on the line now. Matt, of course, the final game in Goodison coming up this weekend. What are the emotions like? Because it's not like Goodison is going to be knocked down. Everton are going to a nice, bright, new, shiny stadium. So it's a bit melancholic, I suppose, reflecting on the Goodison Park days.
Yeah, even lads, the emotions are starting to spike a little bit now, I think, since the Fulham game at the weekend was out the way and the focus has sort of been squarely on Goodison Park and what's coming up this weekend. It's felt like everything I've watched has sort of brought up that lump in the throat. And, you know, at times this week I've been dreading Sunday. At times I've been really looking forward to it. And I think the announcement yesterday in regards to Everton Women who were going to be playing at Goodison Park from next season just, you know, stirred those emotions again. And I think I've seen so many things today around, you know, young girls in the city who are delighted at this news and the prospect that they could go on and play for Everton Women at Goodison, and, you know, the idea that it's not going to be knocked down, and, you know, all those things are a bit factored into it. So, you know, at times I thought I'd be able to get through Sunday and be all right and get out of that ground box shedding a tear, but the closer we get to it, the more I think I'm going to be a bit of a mess when I walk through those turnstiles at the weekend.
Yeah, now credit the Guardian, I have to say. They have a wonderful write-up on the history of Goodison Park. Everton winning the first derby they hosted. Dixie Dean setting his goals record there. And Pele making World Cup history. And indeed, England suffering their first home defeat outside of the home internationals at Goodison. The Republic of Ireland causing uproar by winning 2-0. However, what trumps all of that, Matt, which I'm sure you know, Matt, Keith Tracy's a wry smile on his face. Keith Tracy, somehow you've been omitted from this Guardian article.
Unbelievable, isn't it? Can't believe it. It's probably the moment that lives long in all Evertonians' mind is when I come on in the 78th minute on the 16th of August 2008 to get fouled by Phil Neville. And then I think it was Stephen Warner crossed the ball and Andre Ujar managed to tap one in on the line. And that was probably as high as my Premier League career got. But there was some brilliant memories. Obviously, I'm not an Everton fan, but I think back of all the things. The Rooney goal when he was 16 against David Seaman and Arsenal. The Garnacho overhead kick last season was unbelievable. The Gary McAllister free kick in the last minute to win it for Liverpool. But yeah, some unbelievable moments at Goodison. And the one thing I liked about it was the real old school atmosphere. You went to take a corner and the crowd were bang on top of you. You could hear all of the little insults. And I always loved playing at Goodison. And it was Paulin's first game in 2008, the opening day of the Premier League. And when he turned in the 78th minute and said, "Keith, warm up, you're coming on," I actually thought he was talking to Keith Andrews and didn't move for a minute. And he had to give me a bit of an earful and said, "Come on, you, I'm talking to you." And yeah, thankfully I went on and didn't do anything wrong and we managed to win the game.
Well, Matt, besides the Keith Tracy debut, which of course I haven't been to Goodison myself and I'm sure it's etched on a stone or somewhere there. What, like, on a serious note, what stands out to you, Matt? Because it is a historic stadium. It's a proper old school English Football League ground, which are few and far between now, and no new ones are going to be built that will still have the characters of it. And when you do read back on even the first dugout in England, the floodlights that were there and the undersoil heating, it's just the history that it's steeped in. It's a beautiful, beautiful old historic building.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I think throughout this season I've tried myself to just like have a little look around and like try and take things in a little bit more. So like even in my seat, I sit in the lower Gladys Street, and for the first time this season I actually got into the ground and looked up at what was above me, and, you know, just taking in what the tiles look like, and, you know, on the ceiling above, and, you know, where the signs are, what shape they are, all those little things, which I imagine might sound a little bit silly, but, you know, it's one of those that in years to come, you know, the ground is going to get renovated for the women's team, and it will change gradually over time, but you want to be able to remember what it was like on those great nights when things did go well, or all those great days. So yeah, it's going to be very weird, and I think what's going to be strange about Sunday is that it's going to be inside the ground. It's going to be the last time that you walk past that person on on the end of your row, shakes your hand and asks you how you're doing. It's going to be the last time that that person who annoys you at the ground is going to be stood in front of you or sat behind you shouting those things that you don't agree with. And, you know, those sorts of things can do you ready at the match at times, but I imagine that we're all going to miss them when we're gone. And as much as Goodison Park's going to be there from next season, those little nuances and those little imperfections really that make up your match day are going to change completely. And those things aside the ground, they're all going to be very, very familiar, but everything before the match on Sunday, things are going to be different for people, obviously, with the 12 o'clock start. And pubs are opening in Liverpool at 9 o'clock, and as much as I'd love to be in the boozer at 9 a.m. before every match day, it's not something I can necessarily get around to doing. Obviously, after the game, it's going to be different. There's going to be music. There's going to be players being brought onto the pitch. So I think in terms of like your usual match day experience, I think that probably happened last week, 2 weeks ago against Ipswich Town for supporters. So Sunday's going to be very familiar, but it's going to be very different as well. And I think that, you know, going back to what I said before and the cocktail of emotions that have been stirred up this week, I think that sort of sense of familiarity and sense of difference is going to really add to that.
Well, let's hear from Angus Kinnear now, the newly appointed Everton CEO, on the stadium and the importance of the move.
I think it's going to be an emotional occasion for everyone here. You know, I'm not an Everton fan, but I've stood on terraces with my father for all my life, and I know there'll be many Evertonians, you know, standing on this terrace or these seats for the last time. But I think it's also a time for great positivity because we're moving to a stadium that I've been at this morning, which is going to be truly world class. It's going to be one of the best in Europe. It's going to provide a platform for a world class team. It's going to provide revenue streams which are going to enable us to help us fund that team. And so I think whilst the occasion this weekend will be definitely tinged with sadness, everybody should be seeing the opportunity of what our new stadium is going to bring to us.
And of course, it's not the end of Goodison because this week we've announced that our women's team will be moving here. This will be their home from next season. So could you just explain the reasons behind that and the significance of the move here?
I think it's a fantastic move. I think it's bold. I think it's not without its risks and without its challenges, but that's what I want to be. I want to be a part of a club which pushes the boundaries and takes risks and embraces those types of challenges. And I think to be able to preserve the heritage of this wonderful ground and be the first team in the Premier League to effectively entrust a Premier League stadium with its women's team is a bold and brave move, but I think it's the type of move that really has the potential to unlock the women's game, not just for Everton, not just in the city of Liverpool, but nationally as well. And I think for Everton to effectively be operating two Premier League standard stadiums, one for the men and one for the women, really sets us apart and creates a fantastic platform for growth.
Matt, as someone who attends Everton matches religiously, what will the move to Bramley Moor Dock do for the football club?
I think it's going to change it dramatically. Obviously, just, you know, by virtue of the fact that it's going to be a different stadium and a different place, is going to be something that's going to be exciting. But I think it will take a bit of time to get used to. You know, everyone finding their own way and their own routines, and just knowing when to stand up and cheer at the match, where the songs are going to start, and all that. That will take a while to settle down. But I think, away from the emotion and the sentimentality of it all, I think the money that the football club are going to be able to generate from that stadium, be it through commercial partners, sponsors, obviously season tickets are going up, the capacity is bigger. I think they're looking to extend the footprint down there and build other things down there too. That's going to be game-changing for Everton, especially when you look at the issues the club have had in recent years with PSR and not being able to meet that on a regular basis. Obviously, the Friedkin Group coming in and being the owners have sort of helped Everton get back on a much stronger financial footing. But I think this will give Everton the next step. So I think that there's definitely emotional reasons why it's exciting, but it might be difficult. But the big transformative factor is undoubtedly the revenue and what that will obviously mean for the football club and adhering to certain rules, but then what that will in turn mean for Everton being able to buy players and then potentially to say to these players who we're looking at, well, look at this amazing ground we've got. You know, it is the crown jewel of the Liverpool waterfront. It is literally there as you're coming on ferries or whatever into the Mersey, whether you're flying over into Liverpool John Lennon Airport. So it's going to be a huge game changer, albeit one that I imagine will have some teething problems.
Yeah, final word, Keith. Like, there seems to be a necessity. We see Spurs moving to a new stadium. West Ham, Manchester United have plans now that if you want to compete at the top level in football, you have to just progress into these modern domes.
Yeah, it seems that way, doesn't it? Everybody seems to be following suit. And look, the one thing I think Matt has just touched on there, I'm obviously a big fan of Sean Dyche, but I look at Everton and it's been embroiled in relegation battles the last couple of seasons. And when a club goes to a new ground, you generally worry for them. Very rarely does a team hit the ground running in a new venue. So you'd imagine Everton would be in a relegation battle. But since David Moyes has gone in there, I think it's just settled everybody down. Because as I say, there was that little question mark, Everton moving across to a new stadium, how's that going to be? Because they've just been keeping their heads above water. But David Moyes, you know, all credit to him, he's been absolutely brilliant since he's come in, a safe pair of hands.
No, absolutely. Okay, gents, we're going to have to leave the conversation there. Matt Jones and Keith Tracy, thank you both very much for your contributions this evening. Lots more to come this evening. We're going to chat Gaelic games and golf. Stick with us here in Game On 2FM.
This is 2FM's Game On.
Now, RT Sports' Damien Lawler joins us with the latest Gaelic Games news stories. Damien, let us begin our conversation on the GPA, because the GPA held their AGM this week. What is the latest?
Well, Shane, I suppose the two news items that jump out, you know, the GPA has reiterated its stance that the new split season should be maintained. And Tom Parsons, the CEO, hit out of what he described as cheap remarks that pre-season competitions should be restored and that the All-Ireland final should be returned to later in the year. Don't forget, Shane, that the GPA a few years ago lobbied for the split season to give inter-county players more time off and more time between club and county competitions. Then the lack of pre-season was criticised ahead of the Football League because, especially with the FRC stuff coming in, you know, there was no test ground for that. And I think the earlier staging of the All-Ireland Championships concludes in July, and that clears up then the latter half of the year for club competitions. But that's drawn up a lot of debate, and I think more and more, including provincial officers, are looking for the competitions to be extended into August. And the GPA then have reiterated at their AGM, you know, that there's an amateur status committee out there, and their findings and their data has shown it's a massive, massive load on inter-county players. There's strong feedback then from their own members that they support the split season, that they get both meaningful time with their club and get a bit of downtime in August, having had a lot of focus on the county as well. So Tom Parsons is wary then that there's more load being pushed on inter-county players by saying, look, let's extend into August, or let's bring back the pre-season competitions without an actual plan. So I think, you know, there's a motion on that all the time. There was 12 motions in all at the AGM. They all got passed between 96 and 100%. And then, very specifically, Shane, two motions expressed a desire for an amendment to the Camogie rule requiring Camogie players to wear skirts for competitive games. And you know, that was voted upon too. There's also a bit of weariness then about the lack of progress on the integration programme, Shane. And I think the GPA have kind of decried a lack of communication, or what they would say, their frustration over ongoing efforts to engage with the integration process. And that's the steering group that maybe will bring the GEA, the LGFA and the Camogie group together. And the GPA are upset that they have only once addressed the steering committee. They've made a couple of requests to do so, they've claimed, and said that they've been turned down. So, you know, the GPA are feeling then probably frustrated that they've had no engagement, no consultation or no communication about what other proposals are like. So, look, that was another issue too. The issue of skirts. I think the Camogie, Leinster Camogie final will go ahead this weekend. I think a protest will be made by one of the teams. They'll wear shorts, but if they're told to change back into skirts, they'll certainly do that. It's not clear what Wexford will do. I think there could be a fair chance that Wexford will wear the official skirts. So for Kilkenny anyway, I think, you know, they'll probably maybe wear the shorts in protest, but to make sure the game goes ahead, they'll probably change back into skirts beforehand. So that special Congress in Camogie is looming on May the 22nd as well, Shane. And my understanding is the Camogie Association are doing a lot of work behind the scenes to make sure that the option of shorts being provided does get a healthy hearing at special Congress. Because if it doesn't, it's going to be absolute chaos to get that championship finished if this is not heard at Special Congress on May the 22nd.
Yeah, Saturday's Leinster finals fixed for 4 p.m. at Netwatch, Cullen Park in Carlow, and will be preceded by the intermediate decider between Laois and Carlow. And just on that weariness surrounding integration, we'll get Nadine Doherty's thoughts on that shortly. Elsewhere today, from camogie to hurling, there were rumours circulating that Aidan McCarthy walked off the Clare panel. However, Aidan McCarthy himself has put to bed that rumour.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was all the buzz last weekend that, you know, where was he, Shane? And, you know, at the end of the day, Aidan McCarthy had an unbelievable All-Ireland final last year. He got 1-7, and like it was his day of days. He's only 25 years of age, been on the Clare team for the bones of 5 years now. And for him to strike gold in that All-Ireland final, exceptional. But I thought he had a really strong year last year. And then word filtered through then. We were in studio actually watching the Tip Clare game in Donnybrook last week, Shane, and work him through that, you know, well, work him through from maybe down home in Tipperary where I was that morning, that Aidan McCarthy wouldn't be featuring. And you were wondering, right, was there an injury at play? Now, I was at the match in Waterford whereby he was taken off and maybe missed a few frees and taken off. So obviously between then and the Tipperary game, he was non-selected. And war got around, he'd been back training with his club, Aina Kilimona. War got around then that he'd lost his place in the team. But he took to social media today, said he was ready, willing and able to play if selected. But, you know, had means, you know, obviously the inference is there that he wasn't selected. So to go from being a starting player and an All-Ireland hero to not making the 26th last weekend, that's a massive drop. And, you know, Clare were devoid of a number of leaders in defence, certainly through injury. John Conlon only came on late. Shane O'Donnell in an attack came on, but Shane can't be fully right, even though he did have an impact. Tony Kelly was sick for the Waterford game, so they've been absolutely decimated by illness and injury over the last few months. And it probably puts a greater scrutiny under Aidan McCarthy's absence than Shane, because you'd imagine you'd need all the old troops back in. So I don't know what happened, but it'll be interesting to see if Aidan resurfaces again, but maybe with his post on social media, resurfaces again for the last round of the championship against Limerick. But with his social media post today, he's obviously clearly frustrated with the word going around County Clare at the minute, and felt compelled to come out and say that.
Yeah, Clare off this weekend, as you mentioned, finishing up the Munster round robin away to Limerick next weekend. And we had Nigel Dunn on the show yesterday. He spoke very well on the Tulchan Cup and a couple of counties that are aiming for silverware realistically. Now, they're all aiming for silverware, but Nigel did pick out a few counties that perhaps he thought might go all the way, one of which were Kildare. They were big winners over at Leitrim last weekend. They're away to your own native Tipperary this weekend, Damien. And you yourself were speaking to one of their stars, Colin Bolton.
It's the first year of a four-year project, and we're in a really, really good place, I think, as a team, as a young team, especially given, you know, the blowing from last year, turnover of lads, and there's a lot of lads coming from the 20s, even younger than that, and we have those experienced lads that are helping those lads through, and it's a really good dynamic at the minute.
And I know you're at ground level, so it's often hard to see, but a lot of young players have come in, and from those two matches you talk about, the league final and the Louth game, is there stuff there you can see that you can improve on straight away? Creating lots of chances, but maybe converting those might be the first thing.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think it's kind of throughout the team in terms of the conversion piece where we've definitely highlighted, and it's definitely been a big issue for us in some games. And I think the Louth game first half, we did very well to alleviate that and kind of improve on that. We went in at halftime, very good conversion, and it kind of slipped away second half. But I think it was more kind of the key moments in the game where we showed a bit of an experience, and that's a given. You're always going to get that. I think it was six lads that started the Louth game that were under 20 winners. Like, so there's lads here that have 10 or 12 years left in county football, and look, it's not the end of the world that it showed. You can kind of take it from the piece where it's a great learning curve for us, and we can review those games and not make those same mistakes in the future.
Yeah, and you look throughout the county, like, you know, the standard at underage is incredible, really, really is high. And you mentioned a couple of under 20 All-Irelands that have won as well, and there's been some good development work done too. So you have to be positive about it, I guess, going forward, Callum.
Yeah, no, there's a brilliant setup in the whole county and across the four different sports. Like, we're absolutely flying in terms of underage. The under-20s were unlucky against Meath in the Leinster semi-final, but you're getting the sense when a new team starts every year, they're hot favourites to win a Leinster, if not an All-Ireland. So like there's great support and there's a great setup from the whole county financially in terms of coaches, everything is just brilliant. So that's definitely going to show now in the next few years in the senior team, and it's already beginning to come through.
Kildare's Colm Bolton there. You posed a question about the underage movement in Kildare football, and it's been well documented. We see Loud and Minor and under 20s, and then the senior team win a Leinster title and bridge that gap. And is there something similar brewing in Kildare football, Damien?
Potentially, certainly not as obvious as it has been in Louth this year, like whereby, say, Gavin Devlin has gone in as coaching officer and all the right coaches are in charge all the way up, and it's resulted in a concrete goal in 2025 whereby Leinster senior champions, Leinster under 20 champions and Leinster minor finalists. But there are similarities between the two counties in that the Louth Stadium will get the green light now very, very soon. The stadium in Kildare has been redeveloped and re-energised, and there's a bit of buzz coming there. NACE CBS are very, very strong. They're market leaders in schools football in the province there this last year or two, and won an All-Ireland, and probably unlucky enough maybe not to win one previously. So that's a good sign. Under-20s been a kind grey to them, as David Burke and Brian Flanagan will testify. All-Ireland titles there within the last decade or so. They probably need now to, as Colm said, the Tailteann Cup will be a fine experience for them, but there is frustration in the county that they didn't get into the Leinster final and get to experience what Louth did. But I think on Leinster final day, we saw exactly how good Louth were, and look how they minded the ball in the last quarter. Look how protective they were. The stakes were high, and yet if Meath pushed out in them, Louth were going to scalp them in a second with the space that the Meath guys would have left. So I'm not sure Kildare are at that level yet. However, you do have guys coming through from underage who are proficient in the modern game. And you probably have a cohort of guys that probably haven't been used to winning at senior level in the last 3 or 4 years. And it's how you marry those two cultures together. And Brian Flanagan is the perfect man for the job. It probably will take a couple of years. However, that said, there possibly was a golden opportunity to fast-track the whole project by beating Louth and getting to, don't forget, I think there were 6 points up at one stage in the semi-final and getting to a Leinster final. Now, would they have beaten Meath? Anybody's guess. You know, Meath would have fancied their chances of winning that game, but so too would have Kildare. So they're going to have to go the long way around. And as Nigel Dunn was testifying yesterday, Offaly could do with the Tailteann Cup. Sligo could do with one after making back-to-back semi-finals. Kildare could certainly do with one. They're in no position to be doing anything only trying to win that competition. And they would be a massive shove on for them. And as regards Westmeath, well, they've won it before. They were fierce unlucky not to get results at Sam Maguire level. So they drop back, but a Tailteann Cup title will get them back up to where they feel they belong. So they'll be the 3 or 4 teams that'll be gunning for a Tailteann Cup. 3 or 4 high-profile teams. The rest will be very, very strong about it too. But only 2 teams emerge from each group, Shane. So it's probably more jeopardy there than the early group stages in the Sam Maguire, to be honest about it.
Okay, a big weekend of Tailteann Cup action, and also in the Munster and Leinster Senior Hurling Championships. Can Dublin put up with Kilkenny, the top two, and Munster go head-to-head? Limerick welcome Cork to the Gaelic grounds. And the Liam Cahill Derby, there'll be a bit of bite to this one, Tipperary and Waterford, Damien.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, you can have all the subplots you want. Liam going back to manage Tipperary against Waterford, a side that he brought to an All-Ireland final and guided to a league title, but at the end of the day, all said and done. And you know, there would be the small bit of tension there between both camps and maybe in recent meetings, but at the end of the day, the stakes are enormous, really. Neither side will even be bothered even looking over the sideline to see who's there, because if Tipperary win, you go an awful long way to securing your place into the All-Ireland Series. And if Waterford win, it'll make it 2 wins out of 3, and that'll put them in a fantastic position. So Waterford won't fear playing Tipperary. They certainly won't fear coming to Turles. Waterford all is love going there. And Tipperary, well, Liam Cahill needs to win in his own backyard now. The win against Clare was their first Munster Championship win in 2 years, first round robin win. Liam, I suppose, would love to win a game in his own backyard, and that hasn't happened as Tipperary senior manager in the Championship just yet. Has he got the crowd back on side? I think he has. I think you might get close to 35, 40,000 people there. And for once, Tipperary supporters may not be outnumbered like they have been in the past couple of seasons. Equally, Waterford will be looking to fight back after probably a lackluster display against Limerick. My thinking the whole time is if you feed that full forward line, they are capable of anything. However, Mark Fitzgerald is the best player they have this year. He's super. Stephen Bennett, you know, bone on bone on both hips, as far as I'm aware, Shane. I don't know how the man is even running. You know, to be honest with you, never mind putting in the shift he's putting in, and the striker, just the way he strikes the ball, that low trajectory, like if he hits his form, he's going to be hard to stop as well. I expect a titanic match there across in the Gaelic grounds. Limerick and Cork will be a sight to behold. You mentioned Dublin versus Kilkenny. Kilkenny won't want to lose that one, Shane, because they'll have to face off Wexford on the final day, and they won't want any uncertainty going down there. But Dublin are motoring so well as well, and Kilkenny have a work rate there that's a joy to behold. So look, it's bubbling up to be a nice little finale for the Leinster and Munster hurling weekends over the next 2 weekends.
Okay, we'll be previewing all of those matches in detail on Friday's show. For now, Damien Lawler, great chatting as always.
Game on. Ladies football.
Now, Nadine Doherty is with us to review the Leinster and Ulster Ladies Provincial Finals. Nadine, before we chat about the football, just to touch on, Damien Lawler mentioned the Leinster Camogie Finals going ahead under protest. We have received a statement from the GPA just after we were speaking to Damien Lawler there. And that statement reads, "This weekend, following months of training and preparation, we are scheduled to go head-to-head for Leinster titles. Today, we come together united to make an almost impossible choice because Camogie authorities refuse to do so. We will be tugged out in short at Netwatch Cullen Park on Saturday, and we want our choice to be respected. However, in the current outdated rule is enforced, we will change into skorts solely to ensure the games are not abandoned. We will play the games under protest. As part of this protest, we do not consent to any photography or video to be taken of the matches themselves should we be forced to wear skorts. We call on the Leinster Council to ensure this is enforced, and we ask both the media and supporters to respect our position. We've made this decision based on the belief and trust that players will be listened to and heard. We expect Camogie delegates will vote for choice at Special Congress on May 22nd and that no further protest will be necessary. We stand steadfastly with our fellow players in demanding that choice. We will not be making any further comment until after the weekend." Hard-hitting statement from the GPA there.
I suppose, Shane, the general public are a little bit exhausted by the whole thing, I think. But I suppose with the GPA and the Camogie players, they want to keep it firmly in the spotlight. I think what we will see happen at the weekend is the players will end up playing the game in skorts. I don't think anything will change there. In terms of the media coverage, I don't know. I think that's a tricky one. You know, you still want to focus on your game. Perhaps photographs they don't want, and essentially, yeah, it's hard. You know, I just feel with Brian Molloy coming out there at the start of the week advocating publicly for a yes vote, I think that's huge. I wish it had have happened 12 months ago for the previous Congress and we wouldn't be at this point, but it's out and it's said. Hopefully the 22nd of May this will all be book closed and everybody can get on with things. But it's just good that game is going to go ahead, Shane, because the Munster final not going ahead was a travesty. I don't think that game will be played now, because if you look at the congested fixture lists in Camogie, we might have, you know, a case where we don't have Munster champions this year. Yeah. So at least we will have Leinster champions, and that's the most important thing for this weekend.
You mentioned 12 months, even 12 days ago, even just get Special Congress, get it over the line.
Absolutely.
And hopefully
you
can go ahead. Okay, action last weekend in the Leinster Championship. Dublin are Leinster champions. Fortunate Leinster champions?
No, I don't think so. But I also think that Meath will look at that game as a missed opportunity. We spoke about the danger Meath posed in Croke Park last weekend, and in fairness to them, they brought their Croke Park A game. They looked absolutely brilliant, especially in that first half. They scored fantastic points. It was reminiscent of that, those two Meath teams who won the All-Irelands. They used the space so well. They used their key players so well. They opened up the game for Vicky Wall, for Emma Duggan, and Dublin. You just were watching it for those first 10 minutes, and while Dublin had a lot of possession, they were not taking the chances. They were trying to walk the ball into the goal. So you were kind of feeling, is this going to be Meath's day? Everything was going right for Meath in attack and nothing was going right for Dublin. But I suppose with Dublin, I wouldn't even say they wore Meath down. I feel Meath were kind of architects of their own downfall, essentially, at times as well. They just seemed to lose that composure that they'd had in the first quarter, let's say. And in the last quarter, Dublin outscored them by 8 points, Shane. And it's going to be really difficult to win a Leinster title and beat a team like Dublin when you don't score in the last, what I think it was the last 15, 20 minutes. But it was a brilliant game. You know, we're talking about the negative there with Camogie, but you have to huge credit to both Meath and Dublin, the fitness, the skill level. It was an absolutely brilliant advertisement for women's football, and it was great to see it in Croke Park. You know, I've spoken before about, is it time to maybe move the league finals out of Croke Park? I think any game, women's game that happens in Croke Park outside of our All-Ireland finals, it has to be a doubleheader. And I think that was a brilliant example of how a provincial doubleheader can really work. I suppose just on Dublin, I thought at the start too, you know, judging by the subs they made, they brought on Sinead Goldrick after 20 minutes, they brought on Kate Sullivan at halftime, Carla Rowe. I was kind of thinking, did they gamble with their first 15 again, like they did last year in the quarterfinal against Galway, and they didn't start their stronger players? Now, I don't know if those players are injured, but I just thought that gamble may not pay off again. But when they got those three on, especially, things changed. Dublin go marching on, but Meath, very unfortunate. They were unfortunate. And they were absolutely brilliant, and huge credit to them.
Okay, a doubleheader in Croker, a doubleheader in Clonus as well. Armagh, comfortable winners over Donegal. Not as entertaining as the fair in Croker, unfortunately.
No, Shane, it was a very, very different game of football. I suppose two teams who are poles apart in terms of the cycle where they're at. You know, Armagh are very much on year 4 or 5 of their journey. Even though they have a new management team in this year, there was still consistency there. I feel with Donegal, they're firmly in year 1. Probably pulls apart in terms of quality as well. But in fairness, while Armagh won easily, Donegal did miss a lot in the first half, Shane. I don't think it would have had an impact on the game. You know, they were never going to win that game. It was very evident after the first quarter. But they could have, you know, they could have upped their score a little bit. Aoife McCoy was top class. Her two goals, you know, in terms of finishes, that really lit up the game. But just with this game too, Shane, I feel you can't really read into anything into that game. You know, Armagh, they made a lot of subs. They weren't at 100% tilt. I don't think it was great preparation for them for the All-Ireland series. They haven't had...
But they're going to be gone in cold anyway, only playing one match.
Exactly. And, you know, with this, it was... I wouldn't say it was, you know, a challenge game level of stuff, but it wasn't the level that they'd want. So you'd hope for them that their in-house games are super competitive, which they probably are. Yeah, the big stuff was held for after with the men's game, and that really lit up the place.
Delighted, Joe.
Happy enough now.
In Connacht, Galway were comfortable winners over Mayo, 2-13 to 9 points in what will be the Connacht final as well. However, in Munster, Kerry and Tipperary drew 1-6 apiece. We'll get to that very shortly. But Waterford beat Cork in what was essentially a semi-final. Yeah. Huge win for Waterford.
Brilliant, brilliant. And we've spoken about it. They had the ability to do it. We wondered if they'd show up, and they did. By far the better team, Shane, over 60 minutes. They played to their own strengths, and a massive element of their win was nullifying Katie Quirk. She didn't score from play. I think had they lost the game, Waterford, they would have looked back to that first quarter where they absolutely dominated. They didn't reflect it in the scoreboard, but they got those two goals after halftime, and they were very much reflective of how Waterford play. It was counter-attacking football. It was straight through the middle. It was pace power. And they won the game comfortably in the end, and they were absolutely brilliant. And I'm delighted for them, because last week we said, you know, this is it for them. It's a massive chance for silverware. They might not get that chance again with this current squad. So while they're playing Kerry, and they will be underdogs, a huge opportunity for them. And there's been huge work put in Waterford at underage and with training grounds and so on. So I'm absolutely delighted for them.
Okay, great stuff, Nadine. No games this weekend. Munster and Connacht finals scheduled for May 25th, so we'll be previewing them in due course. Nadine, thank you as always. Before we finish up this evening, the USPGA Championship tees off tomorrow. Greg Allen is in Quail Hollow, and he was speaking to Rory McIlroy.
I think the most important thing is I feel really good about where my golf game is. I've worked hard. I worked really hard in the off season last year. And I think the sort of fruits of my labor have paid off, not just this year, but starting last year, winning in Dubai. I think that gave me a lot of momentum going into 2025. You know, started the year great, and I've just continued to, you know, to play a similar level of golf the whole way through, you know, sort of like the last 6 months, which has been great to see.
There's been plenty of old pros, old champions, old legends speculating about, you know, the intensity that you might need to regain, or do you feel like you're going to be freewheeling or a freer Rory going into the rest of your career? Where do you stand in that argument? And at what stage are you right now in getting your feet back down to earth?
The 3 weeks after Augusta was a bit of a whirlwind, and You know, I didn't have a lot of opportunity or time to practice or to sort of do the things that I've been doing. But last week was an important week for me, I felt. Just to get back into my routine, get back into my structure, to do the things that I've been doing all year, to make sure that I can keep this level of play up for, you know, going forward. So last week was important. I felt like it was a good prep slash practice week. I figured out a few things in my game that I needed to just tweak or improve on a little bit. And I come in here, you know, definitely feeling more comfortable with where I am compared to a week ago in Philadelphia. But in terms of the intensity, like, I feel like I've always played my best when I've played free. And I would like to think that what happened a few weeks ago will help me play free more often, especially when it comes to the big moments and the pressure moments. You know, I think that's where it'll give me, you know, maybe a little bit of an advantage than, you know, the way I've felt in those situations over the past few years.
We'll have more on the golf on tomorrow's show. And indeed on rugby, just briefly, RFU statement. The RFU has today confirmed that following a comprehensive review of its sevens programmes after the conclusion of the 2024 Olympic cycle, it has made the decision to cease the men's sevens programme following the conclusion of the 24-25 season. This move is part of a broader strategic effort to ensure long-term financial sustainability and focus on key initiatives outlined in the union strategic plan. The RFU has confirmed that the women's sevens programme will remain operational as a key development pathway for the women's 15s programme. That is all we have time for. Bette da Silva is up next with the new music show. Big thanks to John Farrell and Laurie Davis working on this evening's show. I'll speak to you again tomorrow at 6 from all of the Game On team. It is bye for now.